digitally uploaded.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Digitally Uploaded podcast. I'm Matthew Sainsbury. I'm the editor-in-chief of digitallydownloaded.net. And with me today, I have Chris.
How's it going?
And not Alan. Alan's usually around, but he's not available this week. But instead, we have Luke from Mediatonic, who is going to chat to us about his games and all the other stuff that he gets up to. Hi, Luke. How are you doing?
Hey, guys. Great to be here. It's stupid o'clock here in the UK, but that's the best time to record a podcast, I'm told. So happy to be here.
Good stuff. It's good to have an English accent around. We will cut to some music and then get on with the show. Welcome back. That was a track from Foul Play, which is a side-scrolling brawler, which is a lot of fun. We'll talk about it a little bit later on down the track. But first, let's have a talk about the games that we're playing at the moment, because there's been a lot released recently, and specifically from, I guess, my perspective, there has been two betas that I want to quickly chat about. The first is Doom, the open beta has landed on consoles. I've been playing around with it on the PlayStation 4. I know a couple of weeks ago I had reservations about what I was going to get from Doom, and to be honest, from what I got from the beta, it's kind of been confirmed that I really don't like this game a whole lot. To explain why, I guess, it was a summary basically of the opinions I had beforehand, but I mean, Doom, the original Doom's games were all very kind of boundary-pushing, kind of transgressive, extreme games, and they were kind of notable for that, for really pushing the boundaries of what games were able to do back in the day, and the kind of themes that were being expressed through games. And now, with this one, it's just a very nicely put-together, I guess, multiplayer mode. Doesn't really do anything that's kind of excites me that I haven't experienced from other first-person shooters. So I don't know if either of you guys have played with the beta at all, but I'd be interested to get your opinions. I mean, it's not obviously a genre that I mess around with too much anyway, but yeah, I just didn't get a sense from my time with this game that it was really doing to me, for me, what the original Doom games did. So.
Yeah, that seems to be generally what I'm hearing on it. I haven't had a chance to check out the beta yet myself, but for me, the Doom games have always been such a single-player experience-focused thing. I've never really found myself drawn to the multiplayer aspects of Doom, so I'm sort of holding my breath that there's still going to be a cool campaign, but I guess we'll wait and see, because one of the things that was most fun to me about Doom 3, which I mixed experience, was seeing the redesigns of all the creatures and all that weird stuff, just sort of re-envisioned for the current sort of graphical standard. So if we see something like that again, I'm definitely curious to check it out. But yeah, multiplayer is definitely a B priority for me. So I guess I'll see what the full game has to offer.
Yeah, I'm kind of on the same page with that. Actually, when I hear that a first-person shooter has a multiplayer mode, that's kind of the first red flag that that first-person shooter isn't for me, because I would rather the developer spend all of their time and resources into making a properly focused single-player campaign. The recent Wolfenstein games were like sterling for that. I mean, just a focused single-player experience, and they got a lot of positive feedback for that, so it really kind of made me upset when I heard that there was going to be such a focus on multiplayer in the new Doom with the constructible levels and stuff. It just seemed to me to be a lack of focus into what Doom's kind of always been about. So my level of interest kind of dropped sharply, even in those early days. But I am with Luke also on being excited to see the character designs kind of reimagined for, the new hardware. It's almost, Doom is almost as iconic as Mario or anything else in that sense. So to see these old characters kind of revived on this fresh hardware with glisteny business and shiny metal, it's gonna be cool.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's still plenty of potential, I guess, in that single player mode. It just the yeah from the beta, my core concerns about Doom were always that the level design looked quite safe or bland for what was meant to be a vision of hell, and based on the trailers that I've seen in the single player mode, it also kind of hasn't resolved that issue. So yeah, I've got deep concerns about Doom, I guess. Who knows, maybe it'll surprise me. Hopefully it does. It'd be great to have a first-person shooter that I can kind of really get into, that is kind of striking and visually spectacular and unique and so on. So fingers crossed for it.
I think in the long run, the barometer for quality on any Doom game is whether or not you can put on a Cannibal Corpse album in the background and play it and enjoy yourself. As long as it satisfies that, I think it's a successful Doom game. So, maybe I'll check out the beta and see what my if my metal collection meshes well with it, because that's pretty much it.
The two things it needs to be truly Doom for me. One of these it really needs, the other one is just ridiculous, really. The first is a satisfying shotgun, because Doom is the industry standard for awesome shotguns in video games.
Hear,
And
hear.
two is if they have somehow, through some licensing deal wizardry, secured John Romero's likeness to have his head again.
Yeah, that would be something good. We didn't actually get a chance to see faces or anything because they're all behind those kind of Halo-style masks. Hopefully those come off at some point because they're not very interesting. We'll move on. The other game that I've been playing in beta form is that Lost Reavers game, which I don't think anybody really has any particular hype for on the Wii U. It's a little bit weird that a Wii U game is getting a multiplayer focused game, given that the audience for that console is quite small. But the beta at least is populated enough that I've been able to play around with it without having too much trouble getting parties together, and it's really quite fun. I mean, it's a game which is broken into small stages. The goal of each stage is to kind of work with your team of three other people to get to a gemstone, and then collect it and get back. There's some simple kind of puzzles involved, in that enemies will attack you while you're trying to do something else, so your kind of teammates need to protect you. There's quite so there's rooms that have large hordes of enemies as well to deal with. Each character has kind of a mix of ranged and melee attacks. So it's I'm not going to say it's anything particularly spectacular or mind-blowing, but it works well. It's short. It's kind of sharp. It's easy to play for half an hour at a time, and it does do a good job in encouraging that kind of teamwork kind of atmosphere. So, yeah, interested to see how that one turns out. At the moment, there's only a couple of levels to play around with in the beta, so it'll need to, the full game will need to have much more difficult levels and boss battles and things, and we've been promised all of that anyway. So, yeah, fingers crossed. Chris.
I was going to say, I guess my question is, I wasn't aware that either of these two betas were going on, because I sequester myself like a hermit most of the time. Are they open betas? Can I just go on to the respective Wii shops and PS4s and get them? Or they're not invite-only or anything silly like that, right?
No, they're both open betas. The Doom one only goes for the weekend. It's only a very short one. The Lost Reavers one, I think, goes through to the end of next week, so you've got a little bit longer with that one.
Hmm. Good to know.
So the Lost Reavers, the beta that this is for, the full game, is that going to be a digital download title or a disc title? Is there any clarity on that at the moment?
To be honest, I'm actually not 100% sure. The way it's structured, it feels almost like it's a free-to-play game. There we go. It'll be a digitally downloaded one then. Oh. So with microtransactions and all that. Obviously, none of that I've been able to check to see if it's going to hit you up against a wall where you can't make progress without spending money and all of that. Fingers crossed they don't do that. But
right, sure, yeah. I mean, the only real exposure I've had to it was the Nintendo Direct briefly springing it out in the middle of a load of other stuff a little while back. And visually, it really didn't look that striking. It looked perfectly competent, but nothing about it leapt out at me. So if it's fun multiplayer loop, maybe it'll be fun to check out with friends or something.
Yeah, and that's definitely the impression I got from the beta as well. It's not the most visually spectacular game, but it's functional, and it kind of only needs to be functional to encourage you to get together with friends and all of that, to just kind of mash some buttons. So that's that.
Button mashing.
So, what games have you guys been playing at the moment?
Well, I'll let Chris go first as the guest. It'd be rude to jump in at this point.
I'm afraid I don't have that much exciting to say. Not much has changed in the past 4 or 5 weeks. I'm still knee-deep in a Digimon Story Cyber Sleuth on the Vita. On about chapter 15 out of 20, maybe. Kind of at that weird point where I don't really want to be playing it anymore, but I sunk 55 hours into it, so I don't want to turn back either. So it's not a great place to be, but it is a good game. I'm just ready to play something else.
So that one really surprised me, because I had some friends who were pretty into Digimon. I was never really into the cartoon. I was that stubborn idiot kid who was like, no, Pokemon's way better. So,
sure.
Was always a little bit biased. I had some friends who were super into it, who were very excited about this game, and they started telling me about it. So I was checking out some videos and was really impressed at the production values on it. It looks beautiful.
Yeah.
The only thing that seemed a little weird to me, which I haven't checked out the full game yet, I would quite like to, because it's always nice to have something to play on the Vita, was the audio mixing seemed really weird. Like, the sound effects and stuff sounded a little bit low-key compared to the rest of the game.
Huh, I hadn't noticed that. But I definitely am with you that the graphics are nice. Part of the reason I was excited, I mean, besides being a Digimon fan, that part of the reason I wanted to get it in the first place is because it's a Media Vision game, which is the studio that used to make Wild Arms back in the day.
Really? Cool.
Yeah, so like they've got a real good head on their shoulders when it comes to visual design, so yeah, like especially like the digital, like when you go into the digital environments and stuff, and everything's like cool neon and bright colors. I have a real penchant for color, like really colorful games. So it's really satisfying me in that regard.
Sure, yeah. I mean, that's another reason for me to check it out. I love Wild Arms 3. I mean, I like all of them, but Wild Arms 3 was a real standout for me.
Yeah, I'm not allowed to talk about Wild Arms anymore on this podcast. So we'll have to move on. What are you playing, Luke?
Yeah, sure. Sorry, I didn't realize I was opening the floodgates there. But so you guys might have been talking about this the past couple of weeks, but I have been absolutely hooked on Enter the Gungeon over the past week, which makes me probably sound like the biggest Devolver shill having worked with them, but I am genuinely loving everything about that game, really. I've just been tapping away at it and getting a feel for all the guns, all the bosses, everything like that. And I actually cleared it for the first time last night and Ooh. Felt like a golden gun god for that. But then at the end of it all, it pulls a bit of a spelunky. You know, there's more to it. There's some secret stuff you have to get to see it all. So I'm still going to be coming back to this one for a while. But yeah, it's been great fun solo and round the office or at home with friends or my girlfriend, just roping anyone I can think of into co-op.
Yeah, unfortunately, Alan's not on the podcast because he's raving about this game like crazy at the moment as well. I guess my question for you, I still haven't had a chance to play it yet, but how long did it take you to get to the point where you're able to clear the thing? Because I've heard it's particularly difficult, and I see on Twitter and whatnot people getting very stuck trying to make progress with the game.
Yeah, well, it gets really tough around the fifth level and fourth level. There's just a significant jump up from everywhere else because I feel like I've gotten to the point, which I definitely wasn't at first, where I can comfortably clear the first and second floor on almost every playthrough, no matter what cards I'm dealt. But when it comes to everything below, it's like if I don't get the right gun, I'm pretty much screwed. So there's a lot of guns, so there's a lot of chances of getting the right one, but sometimes you'll get a gun that is the fight saber, for instance, where it's basically a small metal stick and then it's a gun generated like a lightsaber out of holograms. Whenever you reload it, it reflects bullets, so that's pretty badass. And then on the other hand, sometimes you get a barrel that shoots fish, and that's about as good as it sounds. So it's a real mix. Sometimes it's a real crapshoot, sometimes you just like experimenting with the guns, even if you know you're going to die. So I think it does reward people who stick with it, but it certainly takes a while to crack, and I would not blame people for not having the patience.
Sure. All right, we will cut some music and then come back and talk about all things Ninja Tonic.
All right, great. We'll be right back.
welcome back. That was another track from Foul Play, which is great. So let's talk about all things Mediatonic. Luke, you obviously work there. Can you give us a background? What do you do at Mediatonic, and what games have you worked on?
Sure. Well, at the moment at Mediatonic, I am an associate producer, and I've worked on such titles as Foul Play, Hatterful Boyfriend, Hatterful Boyfriend Holiday Star, a couple of smaller things here and there, and some things that are in the works at the moment that we can't quite talk about. But it's very exciting. You work at quite a range of stuff at Mediatonic. I started there as QA, and I came on from a history from Sega and Lionhead. So initially, working QA on Foul Play was really interesting, getting to learn being part of a small team, seeing a little bit of everything and how the game was really put together, learning how the sausage is made, for better or worse. And Foul Play was a hell of a first game to cut my teeth on in terms of being part of this smaller team, taking more ownership, because you guys have played it.
I have, yes. It was recently released on PlayStation 4, obviously, and yeah, I've kind of... I'm not the world's biggest fan of brawlers, but I really kind of got hooked on this one because I am a huge fan of theatre and live performance. I did love the way that it kind of... it takes that, I guess, the audience being the replacement for the health bar in Foul Play, I found to be absolutely... fascinating and a really clever, I guess, quirk on the genre. So yeah, congratulations to the team on that one.
Thanks very much for
getting me addicted on a brawler. That doesn't happen too often.
Well, it's always great to hear from people who've enjoyed it. I mean, performance over pummeling was sort of the credo of the game, because, you know, but those sort of games, it's really easy to fall into like a button mashing loop, really, because I am a huge fan of some old classics like Streets of Rage, for instance. I still love going back to here and there, but you can really cheese your way through that game. So we wanted to make it so that players could button mash and make their way through, but so they would be rewarded if they went out their way to feel awesome.
I hadn't gotten a chance to play the game yet, and for that I apologize, but I read plenty about it, and I've watched a lot of footage in preparation for tonight, and I thought that performance aspect of it was particularly cool, myself being a fan of Devil May Cry, and it kind of got me to thinking about how, how would a game like Devil May Cry function if... your ability to survive was directly linked to your ability to perform in combos. So it struck me as a really neat mechanic you guys cooked up.
Oh, thanks. So yeah, I mean, I'm a huge fan of action games along the lines of Devil May Cry and Bayonetta. Like, keeping that combo going is a great part, a great feeling. And actually, while we were working on it, one of the games I was playing through in between playing this game all day, every day for testing was the Capcom reboot of Devil May Cry.
Oh, and, yeah, that's a great game.
Yeah, the combat mechanics in that are great. It was pretty inspiring. So, it was really fun on the gameplay side of it. And then creatively, Jeff Tanton, who is lead creative at Mediatonic, he was one of the guys who was going to potentially come on and chat with you guys if it hadn't been at 1 a.m. So it was me who was jumping in with my poor sleeping patterns. But he... took an unusual route into the games industry, because he did a degree in modern theatre. So the fact that he was able to bring that to this game was really unexpected, and I think how we got such a unique, weird world and such quirky writing in there, I think that's one of the things that does stand up really nicely with the game, one of the things that the whole team's really proud of.
Yeah, that's really neat.
I was actually about to just ask, if anybody on the creative team did have a background in theatre, because I studied theatre back when I was at university as well. And one of the things that I found always so fascinating, especially when it came to Shakespearean theatre and all of that, was that, those plays which we kind of hold up today as these great works of art and all of that, they were essentially games... plays for the masses back in the day, and they get very loud and very rowdy when they were watching one of those performances. And I was always wondering when I was playing through Foul Play, is this from the minds of somebody who has that respect for, I guess, the ability for theatre to engage with audiences, and is just, I guess, their way of kind of doing a love letter to that. So, I'm not surprised that you confirmed for me that it comes from somebody who has a theatre background.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's came from that as the initial seed, but the way it germinated, you know, there were all sorts of members of the team, and it became increasingly more elaborate and crazy in a lot of fun ways, where it was the most elaborate stage show in Earth for how long that stage goes on, some of the costumes, some of the expense. But we say Baron Dashforth spared no expense to put on the best show on Earth, barricorns and all sorts of weird creatures included.
Yeah, I guess, is there any, you probably can't tell us, but is there any material that could potentially make for a sequel? Do you see potential for that to become a longer franchise?
We always spoke about some ideas about where we could take it if we were to continue doing it, like a play focusing on the co-op player character, Mr. Scampwick, who is Baron Dashforth's plucky young assistant, come chimney sweep ninja. So quite an odd mix going on there, and establishing who that character was and where he came from was something we were always very keen on. Whether that's something we'll get a chance to look at or not, it's really hard to say. We got a lot of different projects on at the moment. We obviously went in a very, very, very different direction from theatre brawlers to pigeon dating simulators as time went on. But I'll get onto that in a minute. But yeah, I mean, we got all sorts of ideas about where we would take it, what we would like to see with it. But whether we get to revisit that or not is another matter, really. What we are proud of is the world of Foul Play and what's there. And hopefully people still dip in and enjoy that game, because, like you say, it wasn't that long ago that we managed to get it out on PS4. So hopefully more people will see it, more people will enjoy it, and we'll go from there, really.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so let's talk about pigeon dating simulators, because that's pretty much the weirdest thing you can possibly say in your context to describe a game. But obviously it turned out so well. It's a lot of fun. Hatoful boyfriend.
I say that with a very commanding tone, but I'm probably mispronouncing it as well, much to the chagrin of Hatomoa, the original Japanese creator's ears.
I should know better. My wife's Japanese. I should be able to pronounce these words. Anyway, it's obviously a great little series that you've got going that manages to be both kind of a homage and, I guess, satire of the whole visual novel genre. It's obviously based on existing material, but what kind of inspired you guys to even consider making this game in the first place?
So it was a perfect meeting, almost, because we were fans of the original game, much like many other people. I mean, it had done the rounds on the internet of, what is this? This is the craziest thing I've ever seen. This sort of freeware visual novel game done by this enigmatic Japanese creator. We happened to meet her, and we were just talking about how it was a shame that it came before the advent of Steam and things like that, which really gave games like this a platform to stand out, to find their niche audience. And after some general discussion, the opportunity arose from just keeping in touch with her that there was room for an HD remake of this game, touching up the assets, but not touching up the photos of the pigeons too much, because there's a certain charm to that. And basically setting it on the world, seeing what people thought. Like you say, it was received as weirdly as you'd expect from the tagline of, yes, it's the pigeon dating simulator, but people recognize the satire, people recognize the good writing that was there, because it is this weird little yarn that you start out as this anime dating sim visual novel parody through and through. And then you end up weirdly invested in this world of pigeons, dating simulators, and God, I don't want to say too much because it's such a weird set of twists to it, but let's just say if you date Dr. Shu, you're going to see some weird stuff you would not expect in your average dating sim.
Yeah, absolutely. We will cut to a brief break and continue talking about pigeons on the other end, I think, because it's a topic that just keeps giving. And we will we'll be back in a second.
Sure.
You enjoyed yet more music from Foul Play. If you haven't played it yet, do yourself a favor and go and give it a go. If it could get me hooked, it can get pretty much anyone hooked. All right. So, pigeons. We were talking just before the break about various endings. I guess my favorite ending would have to be, without trying to give too much away, the pudding ending.
Yes, yeah.
I was in tears when I saw that one for the first time. That's just it was just so surreal.
That's the one we demoed when we were showing off the game, and that was the moment you could see people either laughing and going with it or just sort of like dying inside a little bit on the lines of, this is the stupidest thing I've ever played.
Well, I guess you'd be disappointed if a game like this wasn't polarizing like that, because it means that you kind of haven't hit your themes quite as hard as you wanted to.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, it really delves into the anime and the dating sim tropes for people who know them, and for people who don't know them, I like to think it's entertainingly ridiculous that there are the ones that are really out there and just crazy, like the ending you're talking about. The pudding-centric ending, we'll say, for anyone who hasn't enjoyed the weirdness for themselves. And then other ones, it's more earnest anime dating sim tropes, but the ridiculousness coming from the fact that, why am I at St. Pigeonation School for Birds?
I guess the weirdest thing I found against all odds was when I was playing, and it did take, you know, some of the narrative paths took a very dark turn.
Oh,
and
yes.
I found that very, very strange, because I was, you know, I'd experienced some of the endings already before, and they generally were kind of the light and fluffy ones. There was all the humor. There was those real photos of pigeons, which just kind of clashed in the most delightful way with the actual kind of drawings. And then I took, you know, one conversation path, and I was like, what the hell is this? That for me, that was the weirdest part.
Yeah, that is something we generally like to not talk about in too much detail, but the game does take a sharp left turn into a very strange place where most people who've been playing it long enough to see it are intrigued to see it, and I'm very interested to hear what people think about that section of the game.
I was just going to say, if you're going to make an homage dating sim / visual novel, you've got to include homages to Bad Ends in there. It's got to be part of it, so there's got to be room for some dark twists and turns in there, or else it wouldn't be a proper visual novel homage.
Oh yeah, of course. Not to go into any particular detail, but there are a few just straight up Bad Ends, and then there's one where it is a bad end in a way that is just sort of like this whole epilogue chapter that contextualizes the world and what's going on. It is this sort of idea that I was talking about before, where everything started as a parody, and yet there is this intriguing story there. It was compellingly written, and you find yourself invested in this world in a way that you really can't justify to friends and loved ones. It's like, no, the writing in this pigeon dating sim is really good.
Yeah, well, parody without solid solid foundation is basically nothing. I mean, if you have parody without solid foundation or meaningful themes underlying the parody, all you end up with is like the Scary Movie movies, and nobody wants that.
Yeah, I would be very unhappy if our games were regarded as the Meet the Spartans of the game world.
Ooh, that's dirty.
But there's some real craft in the writing of these games, and the translation is really solid as well. We were lucky to work with the original creator and the popularized fan translation in bringing this game to the world, really. It always deserved to be this weird gem for people to discover on Steam.
Do you know why the original author actually wrote this? Because I've always wondered what was going on in her head to come up with this idea.
Well, the initial thing is it did just start out as a straight-up parody, to my knowledge, and the reason for choosing birds is because she's quite the bird enthusiast. She has, like, several pet birds. She's, you know, very knowledgeable about them. I think it was just the most immediate two-hand thing she was knowledgeable about that would be ridiculous to turn this whole world and idea on its head. And from just like an April Fool's joke initially, it became this thing that the world was built up for and there was substance to it. And Yeah, I think she really made a go of it, and I'm really happy she did. It's a hell of a game.
Yeah, absolutely. And obviously, you've come out with a sequel of sorts. Is this kind
Yes.
of a, I mean, is there more ideas kind of floating around there? Just because it is like you say, it's this really interesting world, and there's kind of all different directions that you can take it. I'm sure the humor's probably not tapped out yet either. So.
No, well, we're investigating. Well, so Hatful Boyfriend was the pre-existing game, and Holiday Star was also something that pre-existed, but in somewhat more limited capacity. It was something that would barely even run on most modern PCs. So for us, it was a slight change in pace to the game, not necessarily the writing, but Hatful Boyfriend is an otome game where you're making all these decisions. It's somewhat like managing your schedule in a game like Persona or something. Whereas Holiday Star became much more of a straightforward visual novel, something more akin to like a Phoenix Wright or a Danganronpa, where you've got choices here and there, but it's really about the story and the characters and exploring more of this world that was established. So we were really happy to revisit the world, give people more of what they want who had found and loved the original game, but it was still this pre-existing thing in some ways, whereas now we are exploring the option of maybe we can do something that's more of a heavy writing collaboration between Mediatonic and Hatomoa, maybe. I mean, just floating some ideas out there. We don't really know exactly what the future holds, but we really enjoyed working with Mersan and would love to do so again. So, you know, if the world will have more pigeon dating, then perhaps we'll be lucky enough to visit it for the hat trick.
Well, there's always a fighting game, right? If
Oh,
you've
yeah.
got Nitro Plus, if Nitro Plus's characters can all appear in a fighting game, or the Persona ones, surely the pigeons can get out of there and
Well, you
whack at
know,
one
Arc
another.
System works. They'll be knocking on our door saying, "We need all the stock photos of pigeons you have." But yeah,
Play that.
we'll see. Oh,
Yeah,
that would
I'd
be
play
a hell of
that.
a game. I would play that.
Or a MOBA, Pigeon MOBA.
Oh, Pigeon MOBA.
Oh, yeah. I think it would be a hard choice between the champions, though. Dr. Shu, Ryota. I just couldn't choose.
I mean, one of the other things I look at, I guess, Mediatonic's portfolio is you often do end up collaborating with Japanese studios. I mean, there's also that line defense RPG that you've done for that was published by
Yes.
Square Enix. So
Heaven Strike Rivals.
that's the one. Yeah, I haven't had a chance to have a look to play it yet, but it looks interesting. And I mean, I guess my question for you is, what is it about the Japanese industry that appeals to I guess your company?
Well, for us in particular, I think there's a real element that these are the games that a lot of us grew up playing. I mean, for some of the later bloomers that, you know, how are starting at the company, they still will think fondly of Final Fantasy VII and things like that. But for some of us, like I am a real fan of the SNES, the old Nintendo, the old Squaresoft games, especially with, well, before they were Square Enix, when it was Chrono Trigger, Final Fantasy VI, everything like that. My brother had an American SNES, so these are the games I was raised on, and these were video games to me. These were the magic things that people were making, and I had no idea how. So now it's sort of trying to recapture the magic of how I felt about those games when I was young. And yeah, hopefully, to some small extent, we're doing that. But it is kind of a dream to say, like, oh, you know, we're collaborating with Square Enix on a exciting title. And there is a lot of influence of a lot of the old games like Final Fantasy Tactics and stuff, but we also take some modern influences like the Lane system and things like that that are more traditionally like MOBA associated. So, you know, it's fusing what we know and are learning ourselves with what we grew up on and loved.
I was just gonna say there just really is something magical about Japanese games and game design. Like, you can't even really identify it all the time, but you can just tell. And there's just something about that that connects immediately to that childhood of growing up with the Nintendo and the Super Nintendo and the Mega Drive. There's just something immediately identifiable about the Japanese school of design.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I'm still a huge Nintendo fan, but some of the old classics you just can't match, like Link to the Past. I just replayed on the new 3DS Virtual Console, and it's just as good as I remember it. Everything around that, you know, I pray Mega Man will come back to us safe and sound one day, but probably not.
I'm, at this point, I'm just praying for Mighty Number 9 to exist.
Yeah. I mean, I played an early build of that because I was a backer of that, and it seems interesting. It's not going to blow everyone away, I don't think, but it's pretty cool, and if it captures some of that spirit, then that'll be great.
All right. On that note, we might take another quick break and then come back and wrap things up. Welcome back. That was yet more music from Foul Play. So this kind of brings to an end this podcast with guests Luke Borat from Mediatonic. Thanks very much again for coming on and giving us your wisdom, Luke.
Oh, thanks so much for having me, and thanks for generously branding my ramblings as wisdom. It's been great to talk to you guys.
Yeah, absolutely.
Good to have you too.
Yeah, it's absolutely great to have you. Yeah, we do love your games, and we're looking forward to seeing what comes through next. So best of luck with it all, and we'll hold you to the pigeon fighting game.
All right, thank you. You can find any pigeon updates and whatnot on any of the usual social media stuff for Mediatonic or myself. You can find me as Lukith1987. But yeah, pigeon updates, rambling about SNES games, whatever really, and if I ever get a chance to come back on the show, I will gladly seize the opportunity. It's been great chatting to you guys.
It'd be great to have you back on the show. If Absolutely. You do want to catch us on the social medias, you do know where to, well, most people who listen will know where to find us, but it will also be, you know, available on the podcast description, and we will add Luke's there if you'd like to follow him. And yeah, once again, thank you very much for listening as always. Any questions, direct them our way, and we will see you next week. Thanks very much.
Digitally uploaded.